This is CliffCentral.com.
Mark Lottering is in Joburg ahead of his one-man show on the 8th of July at the Lyric Theatre. It's called Lottering at the Lyric, and it's a one-day-only show.
Yes.
How are you, man?
I'm very well. I'm so happy to see you. How are you?
You look healthy and happy and excited and full of energy. Well, I mean, not that you weren't before, but is there something that you want to tell us?
No, there's nothing that I want to share with you.
You've gone gluten-free.
I did think about you when I did my push-ups this morning.
Oh, really?
I did 30 push-ups, like 10 at a time, though.
Wow.
And I don't know. Apparently, I should be going lower. But
why were you thinking of me while you were doing your push-ups? I mean, I'm turned on by that, but thank you.
Well, because the Uber was going to, it was push-ups, it was shower, push-ups, Uber and Gareth Cliff. So these things were all in my head.
I don't know which part of that's the best and which one's the worst.
It was all for you.
Uber.
So I'm feeling good.
But you've been told to go on a special diet and you've decided to stick to that.
Yes. You've been reading your media release.
Yeah.
That's quite nice.
That's what they told me about you.
So that's one of the stuff I touch on in the show. It's so weird, you know, because I know you interview comedians, and I think people want to know what the show's about. And you end up making up stuff, because for me, I don't really know what the show's about essentially until like 3 days before, because I'm just built that way where I try to talk about what's going on in my life.
In other words,
but that's one of the things I definitely will talk about.
But you're not like Jerry Seinfeld, who writes every word down and does it exactly according to what he's... He doesn't go off script.
No, I'm not a genius, if that was what you were trying
well,
to
I
say.
Well, I mean, that. You could say that the genius is being able to incorporate stuff at the last minute and bring things in where you think they're relevant. I mean, I think that's more genius in some ways. It's like dancing in a moving carpet rather than having your set standard list.
Yeah, well, there's that, but there's also just sheer laziness, because I've been very slapgat from the time high school, university. I am the day before. I'm the day before guy, and I'm every director's nightmare.
Yeah.
Because I can give you an idea about what, but you know, for anybody to, especially if you're doing a show that's not just stand-up comedy, and then for me to have to show one person in a room what I'm going to do, it feels very creepy. Yeah. There are bullet points, like I will be talking about the colonoscopy, which I had to go for, which I can see you dying to hear about. And I feel very comfortable with you. So I will share that with you.
I'm honored. I feel very privileged.
I feel like I'm in a safe space here.
You are.
Yeah.
You know what's interesting?
So we took this little tube, Gareth.
Okay, no, we're going to go straight into it now.
Okay, no.
I was going to save that for just now. The reason I wanted to interject with something else here is because you seem to me to be the kind of person who doesn't want to do the same material twice in a row. Like, maybe you get bored with it yourself, and you're so – it's a kind of awareness that not only you should preempt – making your audience bored, that you should even preempt making yourself bored by going over something twice. Do you think that's part of it?
Gareth, I can tell you something. I don't know what it is, but South African audiences, firstly, they're loyal comedy fans if they like you.
Yeah.
And they have no understanding. I know my friends in the UK, they're always baffled when they get here, because they go on circuit and they do the same set for 3 years, and that's considered to be very normal. South Africans are not forgiving that way. If they've had a good laugh at the Lyric and you come back to Monte Cassino a month later and the guy's brought his wife this time, because the previous time it was his scallopy or his mistress, and now he's told everyone you have to.
But it's got
to
be fresh.
Yeah.
He's not going to settle for the same material.
And they wait for you afterwards. And South Africans tell you, oh, it's cool, but we heard the story about the car train. But it was cool. Come stand. Let's
But
take
why
a
do
selfie.
You, why would you punish yourself by staying behind to have them tell you their feedback about the show? You don't seem like the kind of guy who needs that in your life.
I'm not standing there to wait for the feedback. It's to sell the DVD, because if you stand there, come on, Gareth.
Can't you have other people sell your merchandise? You're
because
a big
you
star.
You sell more if you hold it in your hand with them and you point to the guy in the selfie like we're friends for years.
Okay.
People love that, and they just buy more DVDs. So.
Oh, but you must hate the feedback, man.
I
you don't need that.
I'm very, it's the one thing I've been around for a while, but the one thing I still don't do well, I'm quite sensitive about feedback. So if I post something on Instagram, and it's not just a picture, but it's something where I'm trying to be cute and funny, I almost, or even if it's a little video clip, which they've used various clips to sell the show at the Lyric, I can't go through the comments because they're going to be 12 comments of people who love it. And then there's going to be that one douce who breaks it down for you. No, he's okay, but he's not my, you know who I really like. And that stays with me for like 1.5 days. And it takes a lot of alcohol to get that memory out of my system.
Right.
So it's quite expensive to read the one comment.
And there are people who just have no filter. They have no social skills. They might live in a cave. They come to your show. They thoroughly enjoy it. But then they want to give you their impression of something that they maybe didn't agree with 100%, but they're not comedians. And you don't live to have that comment.
Yeah.
That's not the reason that you do. You're doing this because you're very good at it and you earn good money out of it. And it's you've been doing it for a long time. You don't need some amateur giving you his opinion on how you could have done line X or Y better. People don't know when to shut up.
They don't know when to shut up, but there'll always be that person. And I find that if they've come out in a group, it's very important to impress the other three people
in the group.
The people who are in the same bucket with you when you came to the venue. So you need to say something. But you must just forgive people, Gareth. I bite the bottom lip. I hug warmly. I have shooters. Some people catch me out because I tend to laugh before they've delivered the punchline because they're telling a story. I'm like, and the guy's like staring at me like, oh, are you mad? What the hell are you laughing at?
You're trying to process them and get past.
Yes, because I can see the queue behind him and I'm like, what a guy. What a funny guy. So
I
you've
got
to be very cautious.
Don't you hate that we all have cell phones now and that they all want to record a video or do a picture and then you must be funny in all of them and...
I've given up on the funny thing. I used to, they say something funny to my wife.
Oh.
And I'm like, you haven't spoken to your wife in years. Now you expect me to. And some people think because I'm from the Cape Flats that I just swear. So they come up to me like decent, like God-fearing white people will come up to me after the show and say, tell my wife her mother's what. And then gives me, I'm like, no. Why would I tell your wife that?
What a horrible thing to expect someone else to do.
What a horrible thing.
And what a nasty, you know what kind of latent, like, these people need therapy. There's some real anger in you that you want a stranger to say your master something to your wife.
But I guess
there's something going on there.
But because it's coming from a colored comedian, it's a term of endearment. So it's heard differently.
Well, I don't know. Maybe it's also kind of racism. You know?
Or maybe it's that.
Listen, I am fascinated by the way people respond and behave around comedians, especially someone like you who's got, you know, you've got this reputation. People have a lot of respect for you. A lot of people in South Africa are fanatical about your shows. They won't miss them. And I mean, all of that's deserved, but they kind of get a little awkward and weird around you. And I've seen this happen with, there are only a few comedians that have that effect on people. And maybe it's because your personality is also, they think they know you, but they don't really. Like, I've seen you on TV. They kind of think, well, he's this approachable guy. And I mean, it can be very awkward for you some of the time, but you seem to handle it very well.
Sometimes it's entertaining. Like if you see a nun, and I swear I had a nun wait for me after a show 2 weeks ago, and you see a nun say, I wear.
If I see a nun, the first thing I'm thinking is I'm in trouble for something.
No, it's someone.
So she said, I'll wear.
Someone who you've paid for. But when the nun says I'll wear, then you know, okay, you're reaching a whole lot of people. But I've often had, my manager always says to me, you must remember for a lot of people, it's the first time they actually see you. They've watched DVDs or they've watched a YouTube clip. But for some of them, it's really but they think they really don't know what to say.
Yeah.
And I've often found this, especially with South African guys, they will loudly say, hey, but, good to meet you. Can we take a picture for my chick, man? She's
too embarrassed to admit. I don't really know you.
Yeah. I haven't seen your stuff,
but yeah. Also it's the gay thing that makes them very awkward and uncomfortable. And they're like, "Ooh, I don't want to necessarily be in a picture with a guy." And
then they kind of hold you too tightly, and you know that there are issues there. So you take the pic, and then people loosen up, and they start relaxing after about 10 minutes. But the first 10 minutes, people say the weirdest things simply because they don't know. They just don't know how to navigate.
Have you ever had any of them comment on you? They're trying to be complimentary, but they comment on your looks. And then they try to say something nice, but it comes out like, you're much better looking than I thought, or something like that. Where they're really trying to be nice.
Did you get that a lot?
And then what they really mean is, I thought you were fucking ugly. And now I've seen you and you're not as scary. You're like, you're not a monster. I thought you would be a monster.
There are two things that throw me. Well, that one I like because I get that a lot. Yeah. When they come to you and they go, wow, you're so nice looking. Wow. That's the one. And then the other one that I really don't know what to do with is where I can tell they've not thought about it. And they run up to you, like past the handy andy in Pick and Pay. They like sprint to you and they go, we saw your show on Thursday night. And then nothing, because you wait for and we loved it.
Yeah.
But you can see in that moment only she's like thinking, oh shit, we didn't really enjoy.
Oh God, how awful. And it's always you, like, you're expected because you're experienced at this to know how to deal with it. But sometimes you also get caught off guard and you're like, that's terrific. Do you want a picture? Because you need to get out of it as well. It's very awkward and uncomfortable sometimes.
Yeah, but I still, you got to appreciate the fact that these people do. And the I don't know if you've received this, but they tell you, give me, I didn't know this was going to be this kind of interview, where they tell you.
Like you, I don't have a script.
Oh, good. Where they say, don't give me the fake smile, Gareth.
Oh.
Give me a real smile. Or they tell you to smile.
You are smiling, but they tell you you've got a smile. And then also there's that thing.
We need therapy.
This is our therapy. Because we can't talk to everybody about this. And at least if we're talking to each other and other people listen, they'll go, oh, now I understand why they behave so stupidly around us. But the other one is that they don't know how their own camera works. I mean, they've taken a million selfies. If you knew their Instagram handle, you'd go on there, you'd find a million pictures of them taking pictures of themselves.
Yeah.
But suddenly when they're with you, they don't know which button to press. Then it takes an hour and a half for them to get. Yeah. Oh, Jesus. Anyway, look, we are complaining about things. What I want to find out is this diet, because it was in the notes, but I thought.
Oh.
It's interesting because there are a lot of people who, somewhere in the middle of their life, they get information about the whole of their first 40 years or so, they've been eating things they shouldn't have, and that was holding them back. And sometimes they really do a 180-degree turn. They go all vegan, or they stop eating this, stop drinking, some big life-changing thing. And then they get super fit and all this stuff. And sometimes it's a fad. But for some of these people, it really does change everything. Yeah. Is this one of those with you, or is it just some other thing that you're trying?
Look, last year I wrote this musical, and there's a cast of 14 people, but most of the cast, like more than half the cast, were half my age. And it's quite a hectic show to do. So I needed to be fit.
Yeah.
And generally, if I'm doing long running shows, if the show's running for 1.5 months in the same venue, I try to eat right, because the way gigs work at night, as you will know, is you go out afterwards, especially if it's a Saturday night. I love staying out till about 3 a.m. and you always want to eat something before you go to bed. It's always something bad.
Yeah, and Gatsby.
Yeah, Gatsby the best. And that's the way that it's been working. So I started feeling not so great. And then some of the cast members started to, because young people are changing. And one of the young people said to me, try go gluten-free.
Mm-hmm.
You'll feel better. And now I've been basically talking cuck about these people for years in my stand-up, about people who go, you know, shop at the wellness center or buy lentils and will tell
those, they're shops. They are actually shops that just sell nuts and things. Yes. I went to one the other day and then they have a little restaurant attached to them, but you can only get...
Don't knock it till you've tried.
No, 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 sure.
And there in my fridge, I suddenly was with almond milk.
Really?
So, yeah.
You've gone full retard, huh?
I will not say the word, but I feel different. So,
have you noticed a different consistency to your stool?
I've been encouraged to look. Now, I haven't looked in years. So the doctor says to me, because,
you must look.
No, but I feel weird looking though.
No, you're telling me you never looked?
I never looked.
I always check. Never looked.
Because in my life, the whole thing was leave your shit behind you. You know, it's got nothing to do with you. So there's too much of an ego, because when I look, then you can realize that you're like a normal person, and that's what you leave behind.
What, do you think there's gold?
Rock star stuff there. Yeah.
You think glitter?
I think people are waiting in my gutters, like trying to. For gay people, it must be glitter and feather boa stuff.
It's got to be a show.
Yeah, it's got to be like a whole show. Shit's going down.
It's the Super Bowl, not just the bowl.
Totally.
All right, hang on. You seriously, from a health point of view, though, they say that you will notice a difference.
Wait, so they started asking me.
Oh.
Last year.
Okay.
What's
you didn't think you were going to be talking about shitting.
No, I didn't. I thought I was talking shit, but not about shit, literally. But okay. The doctor started saying to me, hey, Marky, so can you tell me about it?
And you,
describe
you,
it.
And you were embarrassed. You had no idea.
No, and then I thought I should maybe employ someone to go in and look once I've done, before I flush, and you get someone to go in and look. And they tell you what it's meant to look like. And there's like a bonus if it goes into like an S curve.
Or if it floats or sinks. These are important things.
So I thought, yes, am I here in my life? So I took a peek and I was happy to report. I ticked all the boxes.
Healthy.
The color was right. The curve was right.
See.
And he says, was there a struggle? I said, no, now I start thinking, no, there wasn't much of a struggle. It was like a normal day at the office. So he says, no, I think it's okay. It's just all
great
about your diet.
Well, so, mazel tov.
There you go.
This is great. There used to be a person in England when the king... Because they used to shit in a bowl. And there was a person called the keeper of the stool.
Wow.
I'm not kidding you.
Nothing to do with chairs.
This guy's job was to check and dispose of royal turds.
Wow.
And that was his whole life. That was his whole job. So don't feel embarrassed. Think of yourself, as royal. Think of yourself as being royal. Someone's inspecting that.
But I thought about that when I went for the colonoscopy, though, because the keeper of the stools, right?
Yes.
That was his job or that was her job.
Mm-hmm.
And then I left after this colonoscopy thing. I had to Google it before because I didn't quite. I pretended when the doctor said, I think you should do this at this stage of your life. Just make sure that your colon's fantastic. I didn't know how they would do that, but I Googled it and I thought, oh, it's a little bit intimate. But then I also thought, if you know that that's what you, if that's your job all day.
Imagine,
because I started feeling for this guy. And so before I left, through this interview is getting deep, but before I left, I really made sure that my bum was looking great because I thought he's going to go
it's
home.
A pride
he's
going to
say, no, that comedian was in your, you know.
That's like, all you need. Like, is
your,
people...
you think his hair is weird. So I had all of that going on, and so my ass was amazing.
Oh,
by
good.
The time I left home,
you got a 5-star
rating. I've three people checked, and
it's on
then,
Yelp.
Like I said, sorry, can I just ask you a favor? I'm off for my colonoscopy. Can you just have a look?
That's great.
So, but then I thought, so this person does this, and they were so cool about it. And he said, and they play this amazing music.
Oh, there's mood music.
There's mood music to get you like to turn onto your side.
That's great.
And then he said, I must say, this all felt very familiar to me. And so the music's going, turn onto the backless guy.
This is your Me Too moment.
And he says, see, this is the size of the tube, so it's not going to be. I'm like, it's fine, not my first rodeo.
The tube?
It's very small. Yeah, some very small. Some people would even be disappointed.
Okay,
it's quite small.
Well,
you don't feel it at all.
Last thing you want is a big plumbers.
Stop talking about my ex. But then there's like a screen. There's like a flat screen where they show you like what's happening. So you can see, your colon. They show you the colon, what's happening when you see this little tube, like sorting your life out and then pointing, and they talk like it's coming to your National Geographic, and they go, and I heard he says, and then the nurses all wink thumbs up. They say, we've got a clean one here, man.
Oh.
He says, your colon's beautiful.
What a relief.
Yeah, what a relief. I wanted to take that man out on a date afterwards.
Sure.
It just felt like something. Yeah. And I came out of there with a clean colon.
Well, I'm very. What can I say? This is a great moment.
How do you compete with that?
This is where you need. At the end when he eventually takes the tube out and everything, and they've given you the thumbs up, and the nurses are all applauding.
Does he say, "I'm going to take"?
Does he play Cool in the Gang? Celebrate? I mean, because that would seem appropriate.
I don't know what he played. It sounded like some Terry Pendergrass.
That's great because you want to feel comfortable.
In my time.
Wow.
So yeah,
what an experience. Would you recommend this to other people?
I would recommend it to people who. If you're terrified, because my father had a heart condition and my mother had cancer, or it was the other way around, I think. But no, they both passed on, but they were very happy.
Son.
And they, no, I am very caring.
What's wrong with you, Dad? Oh, yeah, something like that.
Yes, but they were happy,
right?
And so if you're worried about stuff and you want to eradicate things and just make sure that you are fine, then go and have your things checked out.
Well, I mean, always better to know than to be ignorant.
Absolutely.
With everything, right?
Yeah.
I mean, everything in life, you'd rather find out. You'd rather know what you're up against.
Yeah, you say that, but you also, I'm also one of these people who like to, like, every time I've got to update the insurance policy and you've got to go for all these tests. And then you start the what ifs. And then you go back to that night that I don't remember and that, like, what really happened. So they're all of those fears. But that's life, and you got to do these things. And now when I'm in these shops, these lentil shops and shops that sell almond milk and rice that's planted somewhere else in the world, you look at all these people that I've been talking cuck about for years, and I'm amongst them shopping, and they have this usually in Cape Town. I don't know if it's very cool here, but Cape Town, if you can have a yoga mat rolled up. Like in your left arm.
Yeah, that's almost like standard equipment, right?
Yeah, and you just walk around, they've got this permanent smile. They're just like,
Zen.
They're just standing there, and I'm like, what are you so happy about? You've not had a Buddha voice role in years. There's nothing to be excited about. But now I'm amongst those people. So, but I can see they've all been for colonoscopies, and that's why they have that smile. So you just think back on that moment.
But maybe there's something in it, because the people who. You know, the rest of us are maybe a bit too aggressive. Maybe we're angry. Maybe it's that animal protein stuff that makes us into nasty people.
Look, there's a place for nastiness in the world.
You think?
I think
so. This is very philosophical because, I mean, you know, those people who believe in reincarnation and in karma and all of that stuff, they'll tell you, no, you can live through life without ever being aggressive.
No, I've been watching the World Cup and you sometimes have to.
Are you into that?
I am now, this year. I mean, even when it was in Cape Town, I was just telling someone earlier on, I don't remember the 2010 World Cup because we were drinking flat out all of that time. We were just like, we just walk in the street in Cape Town. Not buying a single ticket to the stadium.
You didn't have to.
And I mean, we were even saying yesterday, we remember somehow when the world got to Cape Town, all the bergies, you familiar with the Cape Town term?
Yes, of course, sure.
All the bergies disappeared.
Yeah, shame they took.
I don't know what Helen Zille did with them. We don't know where she put them, but they've not been seen since. But they just.
Shame.
And now we're watching TV. Russia's also looking amazing from our angle. So, so that's what the World Cup does to you. But then I wasn't that into it. I think. But now somehow I got caught up in it, and I can't tell you this is my favorite team.
Yeah.
But you just tune in for the underdog. And
but it sort of isn't really about the sport, because I'm like you. I'm not that interested in football.
Yeah.
But when the World Cup comes around, I find reasons to get excited about stuff that normally I wouldn't care about.
Yeah, and it's very theatrical. I mean, yeah. they fall. I go to many gay clubs, and I've seen gay people fall often at 2 a.m., but the gay people have nothing on these soccer players when they've both arms in the air with the little shorts. Come
very
on,
dramatic.
What more in life do you want? So that's what I stay tuned in for, essentially.
Wow.
And of course, after every World Cup, then there are always these new, because Cape Townians love naming babies after famous people. So you'll yes. get, you'll know after this, again, you will have the babies born this year. You know, but
Cristiano
it translates differently. Cape Town,
and
Neymar, and, you know, Neymar is very different.
Neymar, you mean
Neymar, that's how the kid
that's
got there.
Very scary.
And was it Lukaku? You know,
yes.
We'll see how that works in Cape Town. So the World Cup has a great impact upon everyone.
And then it's also countries like Noma India, Noma China. You know how we get, yeah, there's a lot
babies
of
babies named after countries. Yes,
right.
Of course. Yeah, I look forward to it.
But it's very important that I mention this. We're talking World Cup, but on the one day that there isn't World Cup,
thank you.
That's the day that your special
thank
is
you,
on.
Gareth Cliff.
So Joburg, don't think that the entertainment, just because there isn't a World Cup match on that day, has to end. That is precisely the day, on the 8th of July, that
at
Mark is doing his show.
3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Correct.
Seeing you nicely through your hangover.
There we go. What a way to spend the day.
Absolutely.
And the Lyric is a great place to do what you do, right?
Yes,
I mean,
I've
just been
there.
Nice
I've only
venue.
Performed there once before, and I remember being on the stage and feeling amazing. I didn't hear a lot of laughter, but I felt amazing.
Why didn't you hear a lot of laughter? That's not a good sign.
Oh, no, we're here to sell the show. Wow, man, people were laughing. Yes. I couldn't hear myself the way people were laughing.
We'll edit that out. Don't worry. We'll cut that out of the interview. No one will even know. Now, what about this Ashwin Willemse situation? Because I know that it's like I'm always loath when a white person does something either silly or very profound. I'm not going to comment on it as a white person.
Yeah.
But you know, sometimes people are going to say,
and you know,
you
don't make many comments about situations.
Oh, no, I
no,
shut
you
my
you
fat
stay,
mouth.
You stay away.
Yeah, I'm very good at keeping.
You and Sachin Naidu stay away from these things.
But if Ashwin, suddenly then you're expected to be a spokesperson for all colored people.
Yes.
This happens a lot.
Yes. I actually saw online yesterday that you interviewed another colored comedian. So you were a champion for the colored people. No wonder I feel so protected,
you know,
here.
I might be a little biased. I might have white colored privilege thing.
So
there might be a label we have to figure out for that. But
okay.
Do you have strong feelings on what Ashwin did and
well,
what happened? And
it's awkward because he's a friend of mine.
Okay.
So, and then you always, you know, you try to take sides. But when the whole thing happened, I just thought, for someone from the K Flats, my role models were messing with me, because then Ashwin wants to leave, Patricia Delore wants to stay, and
yeah.
I don't know what's going on. And what left me, the thing that stayed with me after Ashwin walked out, was that everyone had an opinion. And I don't know if you are a Facebook person.
Instagram's nicer because you can ignore the comments.
Yeah.
Nobody really goes to the comments. You
but
know?
Facebook, what entertains me on Facebook is that everyone has an opinion, and they can write essays. Even now, these are even people who don't have matric are allowed to like say.
And people who didn't even watch the clip or know anything
or
about
nothing.
It.
They don't even know, you know, anything about anyone. But they go, normally your warning sign is always, I wasn't going to say anything,
but
you know, they always have like 3 followers.
With about 5 spelling errors in just that sentence.
That's what shocked me. You see, you think like me. But the Ashwin case, I was shocked by how many people couldn't spell quota. It was
shame.
Like K-W-O-T-A. Like, and I'm like, you've lost me there. Normally when I know people are going to write a lot of cuck, if it's people I know, I just scroll right down and click like so they can like my stuff back.
Yes.
And I don't like read. Because you know already who not to read.
Yeah.
But those I didn't even click like. I was like, man, come on. If you're going to have opinions, like, I like people who write really well.
But social media has become, I mean, it's now a source of material as well for you, I'm sure. But it's just become a very, the worst. In the beginning, nobody would really venture on there unless they had something interesting to say or they knew they would be entertaining. So it was the professionals. It was people like you, and I'd follow you and you'd see some funny things every now and then. You'd post a picture or whatever, and that's still going on Instagram. But Facebook and Twitter, it's become sour. Like now, the rotten people have come in as well. It's like those buildings. When they build them, there's no cracks on the wall. The paint job is still new. The windows still.
And suddenly, boom, it's your brow.
The handles fall off. The cracks, the stairs get demolished. Someone pushes a pram up there and knocks the paint and the plaster off. Eventually, it's disgusting.
Yeah,
that's kind of how it's got.
Move out or renovate or do something.
Got to get out of there. That neighborhood is cuck.
You got to get out of there. But look, I mean, for us, it's a very important tool, you know, the social media thing. But what does distress me about it a bit, and now, it's even for myself, is we sit in bed at night with our phones, you know, and you're scrolling. And once you start, and I'm weird because I would like read things about, you know, people who are in court about some murder, if there's like a... And this is what I do. And then I check, so she's involved somehow, but they say she was the mistress. And then I go to her Facebook page.
Yes.
And then I check mutual friends of mine, like who knows
with the murderer.
Yes. No, involved in. And then, so then I phoned my.
It's all too close.
So I phoned my agent, Emma. Emma did. Yeah. And I phoned Emma last week and I said, Emma, so there's a mutual friend. So you know Shane. How does Shane know her? And how's she doing? Through this whole thing, and he was like, no, she's fine, she's distancing herself. And this takes like 3 hours of my day when I could have written one really good gag to bring to the little theater.
But you get caught up in it, and then you'll scroll through Instagram, you'll see someone post something interesting, or it's a good looking person, or whatever. Then suddenly you get to follow them, and then you see a whole lot of other pictures and videos. 20 minutes of your life is gone.
Yeah, but now
you have no way to account for it.
Do you believe that people can see that you've gone through their stuff?
I hope not, because if someone...
I've got a theory.
I don't want them to track me.
No, I've got a theory that when I go onto Facebook now and you immediately pop up as a suggested friend, that you've been going through my stuff. That's what I really think, because often I've met people and then I leave the social and then the next morning... I wake up and suddenly
Facebook's telling you need to connect.
Friend,
those suggested friends. I don't know about those suggested friends.
I think
how many friends have you got on Facebook?
You see, Facebook I use for work, so I don't. So my pages are all full.
Okay.
So I don't really. My friends are just WhatsApp.
WhatsApp's a whole other world. Do you have groups that you're on?
Yeah, people create groups. I exit. You must exit immediately because otherwise they take it personally. Because that you, the minute they create a group, I exit. Because
are you in any groups?
I have to stay in the family group because a lot of people die and stuff. So you've got to, like the pit bull thing, the family disappeared and people had a search party because my cousins
die and stuff.
Yes. And you got to go to the funeral. I told Monica I went to a funeral Saturday morning. It was because my aunt died. And the funeral was in Palm. And I said to Monica, please don't. Can we cancel one of the interviews? Because I could have done it just before the funeral. But life's all intertwined. And I got to the funeral. And I swear, as the coffin left the church, there were like family members who I hadn't seen in a long time. And they just hugged me by the arm. And they said, look to the right. And there we were, taking selfies.
At the funeral?
As the coffin's passing.
Oh.
And the one aunt going,
it's like a cameo for the dead aunt.
Don't look so sad. Smile. You're a comedian. And
I'm like, oh, Jesus.
Here's Auntie Liza sliding past us. And that's also my family WhatsApp group. You can't exit. All of these things. And then they post a picture in the group. Wasn't that an amazing funeral? So...
And of course, then there's sometimes people who are very inappropriate in these groups. You get people who say... Oh, I woke up with terrible bunions this morning. Or, you know, someone always has something and you think this is not the place to share it. Some people don't know how to.
Yeah.
And someone will say they've just broken up with their girlfriend or their boyfriend. And then there'll be one.
But you've said bunions already. I could never not hear that.
It's a horrible word.
No, you've said bunions and now I start to see and smell. So it changes you. Bunions is just not a word that nobody should say that.
It's a horrible word.
It's a horrible word. I've just
It's a horrible thing, though.
I've just seen a sweaty leather sandal being kicked off under the table, and you suddenly go, oh, my word, but you're so pretty. Why do you have bunions?
My God.
Yeah, that's the...
Listen, I have to ask you about one thing. Like, this is Afrikaner of a colored kind. I went out one night to the Galaxy.
Oh, yes.
And afterwards, because I mentioned a Gatsby earlier, but that's almost like a, you know, it's kind of a hook that people, to prove that they've got some authenticity with like the flats. But I went to a place called the Golden Dish.
Yeah.
And they have something there called a bastard. Have you ever had one of those?
Well, when you ask me if I've ever had a bastard.
No, it's just something to eat.
Stop it, Gareth.
But it is. I mean, that is.
I've not had the bastard
killed...
at Golden Dish. But wow, you hang out with the right people.
Yeah, that is my proper authentic introduction. And it was when, and I was very drunk. And I ended up singing karaoke there. On the top floor of the Galaxy.
Not at the Golden Dish.
No, not at the Golden Dish. Well, we were probably, who knows what happened at the Golden Dish. But I will tell you that thing called a bastard, which I've never been able to find a recipe for. I've never found anyone else who knows what it is. That's what killed Elvis. It had everything in it. It had everything. I could taste syrup, eggs, bacon, tomato, lettuce. There was stuff in there that you should
not
mix.
But he wasn't in Athlone, right? What was Elvis's estate called? The what's his land?
Neverland.
That's Michael. But Elvis has a thing as well. But
what's it called?
People still go and visit.
Graceland.
Graceland, yeah. So I don't know if the bastard said Graceland.
This thing was something to, I mean, you had to eat it with both hands.
I'm going to go into the Golden Dish website.
They have a website.
They still have it.
Wait, hang on. They've got a website.
They must have a website. You know how famous things are at the Golden Dish?
Golden Dish. I'm going to look this up right now. If they don't have a website, I'm going to be very disappointed. The Golden Dish, halal fast food takeaways.
There we go.
Fuck me. Look at this.
There we go. Is that on the menu? Oh, no.
Gatesville Shopping Center.
That's correct. So now you're typing bastards.
They've got a website.
Don't type in bastard. Say bastard, B-double.
No, they say Gatsby's.
Okay, yeah.
They say sandwiches, curries, grills, savories, beverages. You know, we're giving them a good ad here, and they're not even paying for it.
They're always very busy.
They say you can download the menu, though. Maybe it'll be on there. I'm doing this.
Okay.
Here we go.
Gatsby.
We knew we were going to end up
Gatsby,
here.
Gatsby, Poloni, Ross, Russian patty. Mm-mm. They don't say sandwiches. Toasted? No, you see,
it's not on the menu anymore.
No, but they're being very genteel about this now. They don't want people, they don't want to say item on the menu is a bastard because people are going to think, oh, okay, well, it's that kind of place.
What's that thing, fancy restaurants, SQ?
Yes. They should put that on there. Oh, man. All right. So listen, this show, why a one day special? Isn't that a whole lot of work? I mean, it's a huge amount of work for a one day thing.
Well, it's not a lot of work because, it just falls within a very busy time period because I go back to Cape Town and then I've got like a whole month of performing the show. So I just see it all as one thing.
And you don't mind if, for example, if you can tell something's working with the audience, you don't mind going in that direction and throwing out some of the stuff you'd prepared.
You have to. Sometimes, you know, it's things that are very funny at home. And I promise you, some stuff's like really clever. I mean, I've got some silly stuff and then I've got like wild things that even I go, gosh, Mark Lottering, you are so clever.
You don't mind giving yourself credit.
And then you walk on stage and you do this thing that's like a profound metaphor. And
yes.
You go like, how did he get from that story?
But you don't even know.
Being stuck without petrol to ending with a punchline that said, I feel so foolish. And then I just made that up now. That's really lame.
Unbelievable.
That's not the way I'm going. That's not the way I'm going. That's just.
But I'm in awe.
And then you have this, then you have people who sit back and they go, And then you say something, you start something which you didn't write at home.
Yeah.
And people start, something just happens and there's a light and people start laughing and you go further and the story develops in a way that you never could have imagined. So what happens then, I think every comedian, you make a mental note.
Yeah.
This is the thing tomorrow night, you know, to hell with Fulish.
Yes.
This is the story. So,
and sometimes, I mean, it doesn't always work, right?
Of course, when you're doing new material, of course it doesn't always work. And I've been a firm believer all the years that the audience directs the show. They redirect your show for you. And that's why I like running when I've got – I'm coming back to Joburg in a few months and then I'm running for 3 weeks. And that's the best because your show is only right by the time you get to the 8th performance for me. Then it's perfect because if people aren't laughing out loud – every 2 minutes, you have a problem.
Jesus, that's so, pressure. Oh my God, so
you gotta get there, and that's the challenge. And I've always managed to get, because that's the only way it works. The minute they're sitting with their arms folded, or they're scrolling through the phone, or they're going to pee more than what is necessary, you have a major problem. So,
that's a hell of a yardstick, though, as a basic conditions of employment, that everyone has to laugh every two minutes.
But they're going to the box office, they're dropping cash for you. Yeah, so you.
Is it getting more competitive? Because I know that everybody talks about how there's so many comedians around now, maybe too many.
Yeah.
And what's really the problem is not that there are too many comedians, but it's that people only have X amount of money to spend. And they're going to choose very carefully. I mean, this is where it's an advantage to have been in the business as long as you have, because there's name recognition. They know that they're going to get their money's worth when they come to
For sure. They expect that you're not going to let them down.
Yeah, if they go to an improv thing and it's cuck, they kind of blame themselves and walk out afterwards.
Yeah, yeah. So I have this, you know, I believe that there are very many comedians around, but I simply have this thing of you just have to write new material all the time. And if you're not doing that, because sometimes if I say new stuff, even if it's not as funny as something else I've said 2 minutes just before, when people know, they're watching a show, they go, that's so fresh, that's just been written. Somehow they know and they can tell. That's what people enjoy the most. And I think that's the only reason they're still coming back to watch me, because you have to stop working and do other stuff when people are not booking to see your shows. So I've been very fortunate in that way. And I mean, there are guys who are a lot funnier than me in their delivery of things, and I go watch them. I'm so nervous. I hate watching them because that's how good they are. But it's so disappointing when you see them 2 years later and they're doing the same set. That I think is what turns people off.
But you're pretty prolific. I mean, you mentioned the musical just a minute ago.
Yeah.
And to be able to put something like that together and to be able to do this fresh comedy, this material that you come up with the day before virtually, do you ever have moments where there's just a blank, where it might be a day? I mean, you're the kind of guy who, it strikes me, is confident enough to know that if it doesn't come today, it'll come tomorrow.
Yeah.
I might just have a bit of writer's block or an equivalent for a comedian. Does that happen to you?
Well, Gareth, you're talking to a multi-skilled person at the moment. So, you know, I do many things.
No, of course.
I can
run, jump, bike, fuck, wheelbarrow, drive a truck.
I do all of that and push-ups. So, and I got a clean colon.
Yes.
So, you.
Did I mention congratulations? Yeah, that's important. But you don't have moments in your life where you go, oh, I'm just dry.
Yes.
Right now I've got
nothing.
But
that's why I said at the beginning of the interview, I do things at the last minute because I've learned not to panic. And thank God that it always comes together. Because the problem is, you know, because sometimes you can just sit for days and nothing will be funny. And then the problem creeps in because you start forcing the funny.
Mm.
So you take a really lame thing and you want to make a joke out of it. And it just sounds cuck. So then I just wait and I chill and I wait and I wait. And, you know, because I write stuff down. If I'm sitting having a drink at a pub and I'll write something on a serviette that I think's funny. And if 2 days later I still find it funny, that's the kind of thing I develop into the story, or I hear something, or I like eavesdropping or watching couples, or you know, people talking to me about scrolling through their husband's phones while he's in the shower. I mean, those are the beautiful things I talk about on stage, and amazingly half the audience identifies with it.
There's a lot of people scrolling through their husband's phones.
Scroll through the phone, baby. You're gonna find stuff you don't need to find.
It's gonna go bad. There's never a good outcome.
There's never, because people send me stuff and I don't have time to delete it.
Yeah. And then if someone went through your phone, and they didn't know the context, they would assume the worst every time.
And you can't tell everyone, excuse me, I'm in a committed relationship. So that you just send back like, you know, high five and like, you know, off you go.
Thanks for that really, really revolting horse porn clip that you sent me on Thursday. I'm going to have trouble explaining this when my grandmother picks up the phone. Oh, God.
While I'm in the shower.
Yes, sis.
So, yeah.
It is tough.
So you find those things and if they make you smile, Gareth, that's the challenge, to make people laugh loud about it. And that's what I do.
Do you get tired though? I mean, are there occasions where you go up on stage, because you do have a lot of energy, but there must be days where you go, I need a break from this. I'm over this for now.
There are days when you go, I wish I didn't have to do this anymore.
Mm.
I'd like to be at a stage of my life where I'm not doing this to pay bills. Where I'm doing it because it
You're not?
Turns
I thought
me
you
on.
Already were past that.
No, I'm not past that.
No.
No, I come from a colored family. Everyone has a problem, you know.
Oh, is this the tax?
It's that, and I'm going to let you into the WhatsApp group and you can see.
Do you seriously get those requests from someone who you're not even sure is related?
All the time.
And they do you help people?
I do. You've got to believe them when they say they need 30 rand electricity.
Meanwhile, it's probably for something else.
I don't know. I don't know.
You don't ask questions.
I don't ask questions anymore.
God, you are a better person than me.
No, I don't ask questions. So, I'm a bit more mature as far as that's concerned. You don't just give to anyone. Mm. But you do want to be at a stage of your life where you're doing everything just for – I mean, I'm comfortable.
Yeah.
But you don't necessarily want to be performing all the time. At the same time, for South African comedians, you sometimes have things to say, and if you don't say it right there and then, by the time you get onto stage, it's old news because it gets so old so quickly in our country. So I'm also addicted to, you know, to the microphone, to getting up there and telling these stories.
Don't you think that you've always had that outlet because of comedy, and you've always been able to say what you comment on current affairs and things, and it's important because I suppose, first of all, you have a valuable contribution to make, even if it's just to make people laugh, which is a good enough reason. But sometimes it's really useful social commentary, because I've always thought comedians are probably exactly the people we should be listening to when it comes to politics and society and the economy and all of that stuff. Because if you listen to the experts, the scientific experts, they're often very boring. And most people probably get their information, if you look at what US TV serves up now. Most people are watching, you know, Jimmy Fallon or Kimmel or James Corden or whoever to get the news rather than the news.
Yeah.
Because it's more
for sure
well presented. Sure. But now that social media exists, everybody thinks they're doing a show. And this must be frustrating, because for a lot of people like you who are professionals, who craft their material, who have an interest in making it really good because there's a standard to uphold and you've got a reputation and you believe in comedy and spelling properly and, you know, not taking a cuck picture or whatever it might be. You're a specialist. To see these people, and sometimes they'll get thousands of likes and you'll think, but that's shit. Does it frustrate you?
It does frustrate me, but I've come to accept, because I follow some people who are very funny on Instagram and they're doing exactly that. And they get thousands and thousands and thousands of likes, but I'm talking about within 20 minutes. And they put these things up. But I think that's the way the younger generation.
I'll show you what I mean. I want to show you an example of what I mean. Sure. So here's a guy who lights his fart, and just so you can get an idea. Now, this guy is not
we're not going to get away from the colonoscopy, are we?
This is not Mark Lottering, okay? This is some idiot who's got his underpants on. He pulls his legs up. Watch what happens. Okay, so he farts, lights the fart, and then the cat runs across the flame and catches fire. Now, that I guarantee you that guy has got more likes and follows than all of the comedians put together for this stupid video, and he's an idiot.
Yes, but that's something else, and that supports the point that I was about to make. He can't walk on stage and do that.
Oh, okay. I see what you mean.
Yeah, I watched somebody a year back, and she's amazing online.
Mm.
And I just found her Twitter. She'd make some comments on Twitter, and I would be laughing hysterically because she's so dry and she's so clever. And then we went to watch her perform, and I walked out of there, and a friend of mine turned to me and she said to me, "Ah, man, what a pity. She's an internet comic."
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to go with where the world is at. There are a lot of people who will never be going to live shows, but they're going to watch that guy fart with that poor cat. That poor cat, I say, that nobody's got sympathy for. I mean, God alone knows what other tricks he's pulled before this. They're living alone. He's just with that cat on his own. God alone knows. Someone should find that man and actually send the cops over, or social welfare or something. Oh. But then they can't get on stage, so they're different things. They're different platforms.
You're right. I mustn't be such a purist.
No, you can't be a purist. And the things that my niece and my nephew are excited about, and they go, "Uncle Mark, follow this guy." And they send me like, and you see what these people are doing, and they're doing these, 2-minute clips and some rant about something, but they're funny and they're young. But you know that there's no way they're going to walk on stage and do an 80-minute show. But they're just different things. Maybe that's not even what they want to do. But this is the only thing they know, the phone and doing that kind of thing.
Have you ever heard your material being stolen and used?
Yes.
Does it irritate you? Because they always say, imitation is the most sincere form of flattery. That's not true. It's irritating when you see your stuff being hijacked.
It annoyed me because somebody was on a radio show trying to sell his show, and it wasn't working. The interview wasn't working.
Hmm.
Something you'll never know about. And then the interviewer did, what most comedians fear.
Give me some of your show.
Give me some of your show.
Oh, God.
Now, nobody should ever try to do anything funny in a radio interview. And he stumbled, and then he didn't extract a thing that I do, which was unmistakably, it was like a thing about my, it was about my uncle's wedding that I went to, and he told the story. And I was so upset. I actually had to.
Did he deliver it well?
No, he didn't. No. Of course he didn't deliver it well.
Son of a bitch.
And I was upset by it. And that was the only person, because I'd heard my material being used before, but I just wrote, because sometimes if a story is, especially if it's old, you just let it go, and if it's just short. But this was like a lengthy story in detail. And this was someone who I respected. So I had it, I made a little phone call. And
now he has no knees.
No, to him, man.
Oh, I thought you called him so. Oh.
Wow, you racist. So, I made a little phone call. I said, kijk, he's a normal in Joburg.
No, I know. What did you say to him?
No, I was, I'm not confrontational, so I don't even know what I said, but I know that my stomach was shaking because my stomach shakes when I get like inside. Don't, now you're looking at my stomach, don't. That's awkward.
No, but you were
but on the inside.
You were nervous and you were cross.
I was nervous and I was cross. Were you just like going, wow? And then I decided after that I would never confront someone again. After
did they apologize?
That. Sort of. No, he said, "Don't you think it's possible that we could have gone to the same wedding?"
Oh, that's what a terrible excuse. That's not even. I mean, you'd expect at least he could have been funny in his apology.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
But you got maybe he panicked in the moment and was trying to sell tickets.
Probably. And also, what a shit interviewer.
Yeah, what a shit interviewer.
To make him do that.
Yeah.
Because you're putting the gun to the guy's head. You're saying, now you've got to be funny.
Yeah. I've found that a lot of people, and they've told me this, they say when they've got to interview a comedian, they really, really don't want to do it. Because they find comedians to be the worst people to interview. People would arrive just being, as dull as dishwater and staring at them.
Don't you find a lot of comedians are also, they tend to be the good ones anyway. They're quite introspective people. Some of them are depressed.
Yeah.
Some of them are very thoughtful. They take a lot of time to think about things. And when you get them in an interview situation and they're comfortable, they can get a bit depro.
Yeah.
They can get quite serious about the world. But maybe that's why it's a good idea to not try to make them do funny stuff. I mean, if you want to hear their thoughts, because they've a lot of the comedians in South Africa are some of the sharpest social commentators without trying to be funny. When they add the funny to it, which sometimes is a process. For people like you, I surmise it isn't. For you, it's part of how you communicate. You're the same guy on stage as off. You're just not going to charge people in person. And you're also not going to be the kind of guy, who, you know, dance now. Because that's also very patronizing and annoying. But for some of them, it's a process. And they need to first figure out whether they actually feel this way or that way about it.
Yeah.
Then compare it to they're analytical, some of them.
They are, but then that's fine. But then don't make the guy tell jokes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because then I think he's going to pull back, you know.
But if you think there's a low barrier of entry for comedians, there's an even lower barrier of entry for radio hosts and DJs and people on radio and talk shows on television even.
Yeah.
In South Africa, it's very easy to do those things. If you can basically string a sentence together, they'll give you a job.
Oh, really?
It's easy. You've seen a lot of shit on TV and radio. Don't pretend you haven't. You know what I mean. And then you get these amateurs in there, and then they get Mark Lottering in, and they think, this is great for my ratings. I'll just get him to do what he does.
Yeah.
And let's use my platform, my show, as a place where he can show off. That's a horrible thing to do to you too, because they're leveraging you.
Yeah, I get nervous when interviews start, when they start going, oh, today we're going to have a lot of fun.
Oh, God.
I'm like, oh, flip.
You should always start the interview by saying, today is going to be terrible. And we're going to be very dry and very serious. Or like we did, start by talking about shitting. I mean, I think that's exactly how you should begin.
I don't know if I'm going to have that opportunity again, but I'm going to remember this interview until the day I die.
I think we've said it all.
Awesome.
Yeah. I don't feel like we need to push beyond the boundaries.
It's been enough of that.
If we do, we'll be straining. And then you get piles. So let's stop. This is terrific. The one-man show and a one-day only. It's all happening at the Lyric, Lottering at the Lyric. It's on the 8th of July. Make sure you put it in your diary now. Get those tickets while they're available. And you get to hear the amazing Mark Lottering on stage for that one day only. Get your tickets now. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Gareth.
This is CliffCentral.com.